It's been what, about a week since we did the live? Was that last Wednesday or the Wednesday before last?
Correct.
I need the antithesis of what Biden took. That nigga had a turkey sandwich. He was on tryptophan or something. What is wrong with that dude?
Joe Biden, I approve this message.
You are now listening to Decoding 40.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time of the week. I know we've been off, but we're back with another episode of Decoding 40. This week, I'm your host, Vincent Perez, and joining me as usual, my two esteemed colleagues in the podcast game go by the names of...
This is your boy, L.O., a.k.a. Did the Right Thing.
This is Alaric.
This is Alaric. That's his Joe Biden impersonation.
Joe, I need a lozenge. I need some applesauce.
Okay, so as usual, we do some housekeeping. Please remember, if you need to reach us, you can call us at 619-940-4040. Leave your name, number, brief message, or just text us. Let us know how we're doing on the show. Holler at us if you want us to do something or talk about something. If you need to reach us by email, it's decoding40@gmail.com. And then we're on all platforms, IG, TikTok, Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, at Decoding 40. And if you're a small business out there or a big business or any business out there who wants to rock with us, please reach out to Decoding 40, our Gmail account, and holler at us real quick because we need some money and you need some advertising. As usual, as we begin the show, we have our weekly check-in.
I do have some sad news. I want to start off with this since we're like in the middle of the show anyway. I wanted to give all the love and condolences to one of our day ones, Nikimi Cunningham, who lost her mom on probably very fittingly on Juneteenth because her mom had been battling some health issues, but was given freedom from this plane to move on to the next plane on Juneteenth. And I feel awful that I could not be with them because my heart has been like wrenching to really want to be with them. But she was laid to rest last weekend, and I'm looking forward to seeing them just to kind of give them some love. So that really threw me for a loop the day that I found out. And just want to say I love you guys and love you, Nikimi and Michelle and your whole family. It's crazy how... Her mom is not even technically legally my family, but that, you know, you're talking about 15, 20 years of being connected with someone's family that just creates familial ties. So, I just wanted to send love and condolences out to them and to everyone in their family or that side of their family. Onto a lighter note, today the boys and I went out to Brooklyn, the Republic of Brooklyn, to check out Spike Lee's block party for the 35th anniversary of Do the Right Thing. Amazing. Brooklyn is just Brooklyn. It's way too expensive, but it still holds, and I don't know, maybe just because I grew up in Brooklyn and just Bed-Stuy, Clinton Hills, those, and Fort Greene, those are like my stomping grounds. So I'm always feeling at home when I'm in one of those neighborhoods. Although the amount of development that has occurred in Bed-Stuy is outrageous. I think I just read a statistic that suggested that the number of Black people in Bed-Stuy has dramatically reduced. Like, white people are now the majority in Bed-Stuy, which is insane to me.
Wow. I thought they were still at like 65% Black.
No, it has definitely flipped. So... That's just
stacking them up in these high rises.
The granola is everywhere, ladies and gentlemen.
Everywhere.
There is more
streets.
There is more Subarus per capita.
Hey, no Subaru slander. hey, watch yourself.
The Subarus that they drive actually spit granola out of the tailpipes.
Yeah.
granola and happiness.
But downtown Brooklyn is insane. I mean, just the high rises on Fulton Street is like, whoa.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good time. Buckshot performed, Black Moon performed, but I saw that Flavor Flav had performed, but we had left at that point because I was with Baby Huey, who is like the leader of the millennials, and wanted to leave because there was no games to be played. And he was like, it's hot and I got it. I want to go.
Was he wearing a hoodie?
No, he wasn't, but his brother was. And I was like, I was trying to get him not. But then here's the thing. The hoodie actually was not such. While we were standing out there and it was blazing, I asked him, are you okay? And he said he was fine. But then later it rained. So the hoodie came in handy. And then it cooled down. So I was like, all right.
This, all-purpose hoodie.
Right. This is why, you know, as a parent, you sometimes got to just back off and let your kid be themselves. So we chilled. We went and found some places to eat, watched the soccer game, and headed back home and just had a great time. So thank you to Brooklyn for that. I'm going to skip to Vin. You had mentioned about working as a 50-year-old and how your body doesn't respond. So I took this job where I'm working with an events company, and Friday and Saturday, 12-hour shifts, 12.5-hour shifts each. Bro, when I tell you, my body was like, nigga, what are you doing?
My body's telling me no, but my pockets keeps telling me yes. Go out there and get a job, nigga. Make this money.
Yo, my body was hurting in places that I didn't even know existed. It was like outrageous. Like, I was dreaming about being in pain. Like, that's how much pain I was in. Like, I was like, yo, what? This is no joke.
You say that shit, and I'm thinking the last week, the last 3 days of the week, I had this job, and I walked probably about 3 to 5 miles a night in this job. It was just walking back and forth. When I went to bed, I woke up the next day. I felt like my feet were not even on my body anymore, son. I stood up out the bed. My feet was like you, nigga.
You could take them off like shoes.
Listen, take your feet off. I wish I could put my feet in like some sort of youth dip or something, because my
youth dip,
some youth dip, just dip them in some youth, because my dogs were barking.
Hey, you got a youth dip.
That's exactly what they
do. Take your feet off, put them in a dip, and just get up in the morning. That would be amazing.
Oh my god, yeah, I know how that feels, man.
Yeah,
barking.
So, but yeah, man, pray for me, because two clients reached out to me and was like, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, trying to make some money. And I'm like, okay, let's talk next week. All right, that's cool. Let's do that. I want to just also say MTA is wow. Have you seen this effort that they are now trying to put in place where they want to reduce the fare evaders, as if they are the reason that the system is broken?
No.
They want to do what?
They want to attack and make sure that they want to reduce the number of fare evasions. So now they have these exit door monitors.
So like,
you've not seen it
there?
Yeah, have you not seen these guys?
I haven't. I don't travel in New York City.
Oh, okay, anymore,
but,
right.
But basically, what they're opening up for are those people to go out on a year's vacation paid when they get assaulted. That's what they're opening the door for. That's what they're really opening the door for.
He didn't say if they get assaulted.
No,
he said when they get assaulted.
Because I'm telling you, the conductors were getting assaulted, and they're not even in charge of the fare. They just open and close the doors, my nigga. So the person who's going to say, you can't go that way. Yes, I am.
But let me tell you, they're not even stopping. Matter of fact, some of them are opening the door for people.
They're too busy on their phones.
And talking. There was... Okay, I'm at 59th Street. There was a dude, he hopped the turnstile. There were two of these people right there, police on the other side. I'm like, well, what are you guys doing? Like, why are you... This is a waste of money right now. This is literally a waste of money. Nobody cares about the fare being evaded, except when it makes the news. That's the only reason why. It's going to die down in a couple of weeks, and then we won't even see these people anymore.
I'm going to guess that those people that they made fare monitors or whatever they are
yeah, probably, door monitors
are probably people who might have been on a list for cleaners or something like that.
Mm.
And they said, this is a temporary duty. You'll work Monday through Friday, however many hours you're going to work, PMs or AM, depending on your seniority. You won't work on the weekends. They'll work special events. It's probably an overtime situation. And they're giving these jobs to people who already don't give a fuck.
Right.
So
right.
I'm like, why someone try to stop someone getting through the door? Or let me go on TikTok and look at this video. Yeah, I'm going on TikTok.
I can absolutely see that being a scenario.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. It's like they had a little extra money and said, oh, well, let's make this. Or they were given some money to put this program in place. And it's probably done like with a shitty someone they got from somewhere to put the shit together. They know it's not going to work, but they don't care because they got the money to do it.
You know, yeah. I hate these sort of initiatives to go after mm-hmm. fare beaters because mm-hmm. the person that jumps the turnstile likely doesn't have the 290.
Right.
Right. So now you're going to hit them with a ticket or possibly they're going to take a trip to jail. They're going to end up in central booking and put them through the system for $2.90.
Right.
Like it's like the weakest fruit. People. Yeah, yeah. It's low hanging fruit. The weakest people in this system. We're going to crack down and make sure they don't get over on any of us. Right. Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. We're going to get them.
Yeah.
Keep we don't want to look at nobody there. At the top. Yeah, we don't right. want to look at Never. Nobody at the top.
And the thing is that it's definitely 100% racial profiling because
absolutely.
I remember when I worked for that cricket organization, and when I used to work down on the three line, I had a job that worked on the three line, and down at New Lots, there is a room that sometimes the crews would go into. There was a bathroom there, but the police. Like you couldn't see into the room. So what the police did is like they literally scratched out a hole where they can kind of see through, and they would sit there and get all the kids after school and all the, you know, all the black and brown folks, predominantly black people in New Lots at that point. I don't know what it is right now. All the black folks, and they would give them tickets. Right. And fuck with them. And let me see your ID. And like you said, Rick, put them through the system all for $3. But you never saw this shit in Midtown.
Right.
Mm. And white folks jump. White folks, they don't jump. They just open the door or they just slide through all the time. Because I would see it as a supervisor when I worked down there. I see this shit all the fucking time, especially pre-pandemic and during the pandemic. They did not pay the fare.
Right.
So this is racial profiling. It's only done in certain neighborhoods. It's only to get the numbers and to fingerprint more black and brown people. Because they're not doing this shit. They're not doing it out on Wall Street. They're not doing it in the Central Park area. They're not doing that. They're only fucking with people in New Lots, the Bronx, certain areas where they know it's predominantly black, Latino, people from the islands, Caribbean neighborhoods where people are struggling to fucking make ends meet. That's all it is. That's the initiative.
This is why I think Mayor Adams, I call him a pussy. I know you said he's not a pussy because pussy's good, but
he's
weak. He's weak because these are the people that he goes after.
Yeah.
There's not been a situation yet where this guy has taken on something that was going to be a big problem for him to help the mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen.
No.
He's going to punch down. That's what he does.
Always. Always.
Yeah.
And speaking of Mayor Adams, I saw a video with him being shouted out at some Pride event. Yeah. And shout out, this is the end of Pride Month. I don't know if you guys were out in the city, but New York City was gay today. They must have had some extravaganza celebrating the end of Pride.
Was it extra gay?
It was overly gay. Like, it was super gay. And and rest in peace to anybody who has any problem with gay people, because I'm sure you died today. You were
it's
absolutely
so fucking gay.
Turned into Thanos dust today because it was
it was rainbow gay. Dust too. He snapped his fingers and twisted his hand. Snap, bitches!
How did he die?
The children were just killing people today.
He had a fatal case of homophobia.
LGBTIAQ+- divide. Oh man, it was super gay in the city, but it seems like everybody had a good time. But that's pretty much it. Oh, one last question: where is Jussie Smollett? And with that, I am done. This is my check-in, and I'm done speaking. Merch drop!
You are now listening to Decoding 40.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? This is Vin from Decoding 40 letting you know about Decoding40Pod.com. That's right, Decoding40Pod.com. That's our new site that's got all our merch on it. Decoding40Pod.com.
Decoding40Pod.com.
The last few months, I really started to get into going to the barbershop again, mm-hmm. just getting a shave. Last week, my son was having his step-up ceremony. So we both went to the barbershop and we got haircuts together. And I went to one barber and he went to the other barber. So we've tried a number of barbershops since my son has been getting his haircut. The last one, which was one of our favorites for a second, the guy kind of passive-aggressively Zeke'd my son, and I was a little mad about it. All right, so if you tell a barber, I think the fade line is a little bit low. I think you should bring it up a bit because of the shape of my son's head. It would look better if it was slightly up. Slightly up. You heard that right. Slightly up. Slightly up.
He didn't have a little man looking like George Jefferson. Wheezy!
So when I said slightly up, he was like, all right. So he basically gave him a kid and play.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he took it all the way up. There was no fade. He took it all the way up. I was like,
I'm going to be honest with you. If I can add another thing to my list of pet peeves, it's barbers who don't know how to fade properly.
It's not that he don't know how to fade properly. This was passive aggressive. Mm-hmm. Me critiquing his work. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, okay, you want it up a little bit, Poppy? Okay, it's all the way up. He took it all the way up.
All the way up. Dominican?
Yeah, he's Dominican.
Yeah.
So then I was just like, you know what? Here, son, give him this $25. We're never coming back here. So we went back to a bar.
Oh, you didn't go to your regular shop.
That was our regular shop. But after he did that shit, that's no longer.
Oh, okay. Got you.
Shop.
Got you.
So we went back to a shop that we had tried before because now you got to make appointments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
In my era, you didn't make appointments. Yeah, you walked in a barbershop, you took a seat, you said how you many waited. You got.
You also waited 60 minutes to an hour and a half, though.
Yeah, you waited.
Sometimes that still happens with an appointment. So.
Yeah. So I'm not used to this whole appointment shit.
No shade. No shade to your
and barber. I love my barber. I do.
I was going to say his name.
I love my barber. He always hooks me up. But sometimes when he's running behind, I'm running a little late. Son, I made an appointment.
He over there running that shit like a salon.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rick.
So we went back to a shop that we had tried before. And he had gotten good haircuts there. But the guy that gave him the best haircut was never available, so we were trying other things. We said, all right, we're going to go back there. We're both going to get haircuts. And they took two walk-ins. And my new barber, his name is Indio, and he's got a plaque. It says Master Barber. He speaks very little English. He has a Bluetooth only on one side.
This is only
you know that's a good haircut, right?
No.
He's always on the phone.
DR.
Yeah, he's always on the phone. He's in his 60s. Right. So he sits me in the chair and he cuts me up, shaves my head, straight razors my head in a way that I don't get razor bumps. I'm like, what? What are you doing? Hot towel.
Magical.
Massage the face. He shapes up my beard and mustache. And I look in the mirror and I'm like, this is what rich people feel like. I was like, I looked in the mirror and I was like, I look wealthy.
I'm rich, man.
The other barber, he hooked my son up. His hair looks great. Great. Okay. So week goes by. I'm like, all right, I need another haircut because my anniversary is coming up. Happy anniversary to you, Vin.
To you as well.
Oh, happy anniversary to both of you guys. Yeah.
No doubt. You as well.
So anniversary dinner. So the day before, I want to get a cut, and I go back to the barbershop. Indio is busy. But the guy who cut my son, he's like, no, 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 go to him. He's going to hook you up, right? Mm-mm. I said, okay, you sure? He's like, yeah, he's going to hook you up. So I sit down in a chair and, you know, he straight raises my head. So far, so good. It's going well. And then he gets to my beard and mustache, right? And he's trying to follow the shape of the soul patch into the goatee, and he digs down too far, and then it looks like, I'm like, motherfucker, what are you doing?
It looked like the vampire of Brooklyn.
Evil is good.
The shit looked fucking insane. I was like, you know what? Shave it off. We're going to start again, because that you done fucked that up. So now I only have a mustache and a soul patch because this guy fucked up my goatee. And you know how long it takes me to grow hair to connect?
Did you say something?
As an adult, huh?
Did you say something to India?
I didn't.
You had to be like,
he sent me to that guy because he had one guy waiting and he had to go somewhere. So he didn't want to take me on. So,
so what you're going to have to do from now on, this is the lesson to you, Rick.
Yeah.
You got to make an appointment with Indio.
Yeah.
And double down with that shit. Matter of fact, take two appointment spots, nigga, because I'm making sure you kidding me.
I would also add.
Come in early and give him Indio, a deposit.
Right. You should have told Indio it's your anniversary night.
I should have.
Yeah. Should have played that card.
He would have made an exception.
You know. Here's an extra $5 on top of my normal tip. Like,
I should have at least rubbed it in that he had to shave off my goatee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
look what you did, Indio. Look what you did.
But your boy
should have turned to him with that the Indian tear. Tear coming out.
I should have turned to him with the shit that he did to my chin. Would you look at this shit, Indio? Right. Does this look like a rich guy?
He would talk to the barbershop. ¿Qué pasó? What you do to his face? His face, you fuck it up, my face. I say it to
like
you.
This does not look like a rich man.
You broke his face. Papa, you broke
I'm poor again, Indio.
Got me looking homeless out this bitch.
Yo, just the way he did the mustache, it was just the right thickness. Just the right shape. It was like he gave me enhancements, but I didn't have any enhancements. It was just like
this nigga Rick was like, I look like Morris Chestnut out this bitch.
Like he only shaved the hairs now that were necessary like to go and kept all the rest of them.
Oh shit.
Damn it, man.
Yeah. Oh, man. So that's another barbershop, you know.
Nightmare
horror story. Yeah, wow.
Absolutely. But the great thing is that his hair, and it'll grow back and I can start all over again. As long as it's not on top of my head, it will grow back. Some updates on Laundromat. Finally, we have found a young lady who's working in the laundromat and she's doing well. She is a very nice young lady. She just graduated and she doesn't cause any trouble. She hands out change. She does what she's supposed to do, keeps the place clean. And now she doesn't want to work Sundays anymore.
Oh.
Because she wants to go to church. So how do you combat that?
Is she a whore?
I was going to say, no, I don't think so. I was going to say, fuck your church, but.
How about I pay you double on Sundays? Don't praise the Lord at the laundromat. Hey, how about I pay you double on Sundays and you could turn on the Jesus channel on the radio?
There you go.
You can have service here.
Watch it on YouTube.
I'll let you bring your Bible in.
Sundays, wash and pray.
Well, I mean, look, I had to go there at least once a week to cash out and do payroll anyway. So Sunday is just a day that I'll have to work there for now. Because it doesn't make sense to hire another person just for one day.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I'm still a laundromat.
How's your dad doing?
He's doing well. Okay. I after I closed up today, I went by and I hung out with him for a little bit. And he was bragging about putting on some weight. He is now at 133 pounds. And if you remember, when he came out of the hospital back in March, he was 118 pounds.
So yeah, he put on 20 pounds. It's good.
He's put on some weight. He's doing well. Well, last week, he had a friend who was visiting from Jamaica. I don't know if it's his girlfriend or who she is exactly, but I know who she is. I just don't know her. I don't know her title. I don't know the nature of their relationship.
Mm.
But she came and she spent a week and some days.
Boom, boom.
Are you sure you can do this?
Hold on. Easy on this slide. This slide easy. Don't make me work hard for it, you know. Take it easy. Slide slowly, please. Slide slowly. He had a fucking BP machine on when he was smashing. He's like, if my blood pressure go up, hold it down. Slowly, please.
Yo, that's hilarious.
No, shout out to that. I'm glad
to hear that, though.
No doubt.
I'm 99% sure that can't happen anymore, but
shit.
I'm sure he enjoyed the company.
Yeah.
I'm sure I don't know if she bought him any blue pills. I don't think so.
He was like, you know, I can't go too hard, but you can bait me. Give me a rub down. No doubt.
Slowly,
please. That's what's up, and I'm glad that he put on some weight, you know, and he's better spirits. Yeah, you know what? Is he doesn't have to worry about the everyday grind right now. So it's kind of like he's changing gears, changing speeds, and being able to relax a little bit. And
I'm grateful for that. Because I don't know if in any other scenario he would have been able to slow down and actually enjoy a bit of anything, you know? No. But I still wanna get him. I think we want to move him out of that apartment. I would love to take a vacation with him. I would love to go back to Jamaica with him.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's going to be a little bit harder with mobility, but you know, we can do wheelchairs to get on the plane.
Yeah, wheelchairs.
We can do all that. He's got a walker. He's got a cane. You know, we can get around a little bit, and I'm sure he just wants to sit in that seawater. You know.
Yeah.
He hasn't been back to Jamaica since 1995.
Oh wow!
The last time he was in Jamaica.
He's got to go. He's got to go. That water's healing, man. For real.
So it's like I just want to clear it with his doctors, and I really would love to take a trip with him and you know, visit some places.
That'll be dope.
His childhood home in that long, you know, and I think he would enjoy that. I think it would bring him some great closure.
No doubt, and also it'd be great opportunity for you to like do some videos, some like really have those dope conversations, and he'll tell you some wild ass stories about him running the streets, and just like, you know, that's dope, man. Really try to do that, man. That's amazing.
And I do want to say a happy birthday shout out to my aunt, who is my dad's sister, his oldest sister, who turned 90 this week.
Wow. Shout out to her. Yeah. Congratulations.
Happy birthday, auntie.
Sure. Yeah. No doubt. Happy birthday.
And I think that is it for Molt. I want to say happy anniversary to my wife. We did celebrate our anniversary this past week. This is 11 years of marriage and 15 years together.
Drop a bomb on it. That's nice.
Yeah. It's crazy to think about those numbers, because on one hand, it feels like that much time has not passed. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, damn, that's a lot of time.
Listening to Decoding 40.
What's good, people? This is your boy, L.O., a.k.a. The Ad Man. If you like this show, then make sure you subscribe to Decoding 40 on IG, Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok.
Last time we recorded was probably Father's Day weekend, or maybe after that. I'm not sure. I can't really remember because I'm on the same shit Biden's on right now. I spent Saturday after Father's Day weekend. I got up with my pops and we met up in the Bronx at this Cuban restaurant, pretty good food. And my entire life, my father has been this larger than life figure to me. And, you know, going back to when I was a child, you know, my father was in the Marine Corps. He's always been stronger than four men. You know, my father's about 6'1", 6'2", but you get older, you start to shrink a little bit. He was always this larger than life figure to me up until, you know, into my 40s. He's always been strong and everything else. And he still looks great. But my father is 79 years old now. And it's hard to see him at 79 years old. Like, he's starting to lose his hair, and not starting. He's losing his hair. And he doesn't look as menacing to me as he did when I was a kid. And we sat there and we ate something, and I'm starting to see the stages of age getting to him and him being a little forgetful. And I'm noticing his ADHD, like he's got these like obsessive compulsive type of things in his personality. He kept doing something and noticing things and like losing focus on conversations we were having. And we go to the restaurant, and for the first time, I took charge of things in that, you know, the guy was trying to sit us in his fucked up seat. I was like, nah, we're not sitting here. We're sitting over here. And right. He was like, okay. Like normally my father would be like, nah, we're not sitting here. We're sitting over here. But I was the one who kind of took charge of that date with him. And we sat there. We had we had a beer and we shared a beer. It was a real quick lunch date. But I'm noticing now that he's 79 and it's starting to show a little bit. He's still sharp, but I can see it a little bit. And irony is that we both showed up wearing the same colors, blue jeans and a white shirt. And I was like, what are you fucking twins here? And he was like, what? I said, forget about it. So we're fucking twins.
Wait, how did he get there? How did he get there?
He drives. No, my father's, he drives. Okay. You know, he's not at all incapacitated in that sense, but I can see the lore of my dad, the legend of my father is starting to become more human to me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Good date. We laughed a little bit, talked, showed him pictures of his granddaughters, and he got a kick out of that. The week of Father's Day, both my two daughters took me out, and they paid. And they lucky that I didn't run a drink tab on their ass, because I thought about it. Because we went to the spot, they got really good margaritas, and I was like, nah, I'm not going to do it to my girls. But we had a great time. We ate. We went down to Hoboken at this Mexican spot, great margaritas, some Mexican food. We went over to the water. We wound up getting some cookies afterwards. It was really, really good to have both my girls together. Anytime I have my daughters together with me, I feel whole. Mm. I feel like I'm supposed to feel all the time, because I've watched both these young women grow into young ladies. You know, shout out to my youngest, the youngest of the Perez's, and she turned 17 tomorrow. We're recording on a Sunday. She turned 17 tomorrow, going into her senior year in high school. But yeah, we got together actually today, went to a restaurant and had some drinks, and we ate and had a great time. My she wife. No. Oh. That's a whole other story. But anyway, she's a teenager and she's of my blood, right? So she's gone to a party or two, right? But
let's get some shots over here. Let's get some shots.
She's like, what are we doing? We doing vodka gimlets? What are we doing?
Age is nothing but a number. Stop it.
She's like two fireballs and a Guinness. What? No. She's 17 and she's beautiful. Both of my daughters are very beautiful girls. God has blessed me with two beautiful women. They look a lot like my mom. They look a lot like my youngest looks like my wife, my mom, me.
Yeah.
And
it's crazy how she looks like your mom and your wife at the same time.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It is crazy. It's like having, you know, I lost my mother. It's going to be 10 years this year. I'm looking at them, and it's funny because they both have qualities of my mother. My youngest is very, very artistic oriented. So she has a lot of my mother's qualities in that way. But she's also like my grandmother. My grandmother was very vain, beautiful woman, very vain, but and no joke with the mouth. But she was sassy as shit. My grandmother wouldn't take shit from nobody. And we'd be on Jamaica Avenue as a kid. And I'd be like, Grandma, please, like, we might get fucked up out here. It's like, this is not Puerto Rico.
You might get fucked up.
Yeah, exactly.
You better get your shit together.
You better get your shit together, because Grandma carries a razor, you know? But exactly, L. That was my grandmother's attitude, right? Ain't nobody fucking me up. But the both of them, I watched them. They had, and I told my wife, I said, it was like having lunch with my mother and my grandmother. And my youngest looks older than the oldest. And when the woman came to take our order, she was like, oh, so what would you guys like to drink? And my daughter's sitting there. And I was like, she'll have an apple juice. The fuck? Like, she was like, can I have one too? No, you can't have a margarita. Am I condoning your alcoholism? No, wait till I'm not around to do what you're going to do. Right. So that was a great experience. Like I said, met with them on that Thursday, Saturday, met with my dad. Last couple of weeks, just been working. Like I alluded to earlier, I was on this job last week, man. And like I said earlier, my feet, I felt like I didn't have any feet when I woke up the next day. I was like, I got to stand. My feet was like, take it easy, Poppy. It's not like it used to be. You know what I'm saying? My feet sounded like Willie Strings.
Like, hey, baby, what are you doing? Hey, you stand up on me. Come on, man. Nigga, what you doing?
But, you know, the job is jobbing, making some decent money right now, which is good. Having a good time doing it. I, too, celebrated my 19th wedding anniversary on the 27th. And we've been together now since 98, which makes it 26 years in December. Son,
wow,
we've been together half our lives. We got big numbers, son. So 19 years in the game, and we didn't really do much. We kind of kept it local because I got up that day and I had to work that day, but I got off early enough, so I was like, all right, so, you know, let's go get some lunch, whatever. And my wife was like, honestly, I don't really want to do much. I was like, well, what do you want to do? She's like, let's just make something here. So we went out to the supermarket, got some things, we had lunch at the house, and kind of relaxed, you know what I mean? It was a very laid back anniversary. And pretty much like I've just been enjoying some self-reflection the last couple of weeks, and definitely in a better place, optimistically, you know, mentally, optimistically, and not really sweating too many things. I think the most aggravation I've received, the most aggravation I have had to deal with in the last couple of weeks is what's going on in the country. But I did have a fender bender the other day on my way to work. Nothing serious. I mean, my car wasn't damaged. The other person's car was kind of not fucked up, but it was some damage to it. Like I was behind them and I was coming, turning into the lane to the left of me, and I misjudged it. And my rear view mirror hit the rear left quarter panel of their car right above their wheel. And these cars today are made out of paper. And I mean, my shit literally tapped her shit, and it put a dent in and a long scratch on the side of her car.
What was she driving?
She was driving. It was like a 2024 Jeep. I don't know if it was a Cherokee or a Jeep something. It might have been a Liberty, but it was like it was one of the smaller Jeeps.
Okay.
And when I hit her, she turned around. She looked, you hit me. I was like, I know I hit you. I thought she was going, J.G. Wentworth. She says, she sounded like a J.G. Wentworth. Yeah. I want my money now. And I said, don't worry. I said, you know, pull over. And thank God that I might have been doing all of 3 miles an hour, because I was literally coming out of the lane and my shit touched her car.
Oh, okay.
She had some kids in the car, and I was like, again, we were in traffic when it happened. So she gets out, and I immediately pull out my phone. I took pictures of her damage, the minor damage that I had in my car. I said, listen, if we call the police, it's going to take forever to get here. I said, we're in traffic right now. It's going to take them 30, 40 minutes, and they're not going to come that quick. I had to go to work. So I gave her my information, you know, on my way to work after I literally pulled off, called up, reported the accident. And they were like, we'll contact her. You know, I have decent insurance. I got full coverage. So Liberty Insurance will take care of it. And they were like, well, do you want to fix your car? I was like, look, my $500 deductible, the damage is literally a scratch. I'm not going to pay that to get my rear view replaced when it's not even damaged. Like, I can take a marker and fix that shit. Mm. So shout out to them. And, you know, again, the woman was cool. Like, she was like, this ain't even my car. This is my son's car. I said, well, where's the registration? She's like, I don't know. The car's brand new. I don't know where he keeps it. I'm thinking it's got to either be in the glove compartment or the middle compartment. But I didn't sweat it. She didn't sweat it. She took my information down. And like I said, the insurance is going to take care of it. But yeah, man, other than that, this is the check-in. And before I go, I have to do my normal weather report. I think Cooper would be mad if I did.
Joining us now, the top New York meteorologist, Vincent Perez. Good morning, Vincent. How are things looking?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's hot as fuck today. It's been hot as fuck. The worst thing to do when it's 95 degrees is when your job has the expectation that you want to wear, they want you to wear a uniform. And I have to wear a uniform in certain situations, and it's not fun. I went to Amazon because when I first got my uniforms, they were like, oh, if you have a tattoo on your arm, you can't have short sleeve shirts. And as I travel and do my job, I'm like, why does it look like Sons of Anarchy around here? Motherfuckers got on short sleeve shirts and got tattoos from their fingertips up to their fucking neck. But you want to fuck with me? I was like, I got your ass. I went on Amazon and ordered shirts that look exactly like your uniform shirts. One of the people were like, is that a uniform shirt? I was like, yep. I was like, it's 95 degrees out this motherfucker. I am not going to burn up in no long sleeve.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been hot out here. And it's like, it rains and it gets hotter. I don't know what that's about. But other than that, man, that's
humidity.
It's the humidity, son. It's as hot as
weather, boy.
I guess I've been in the studio for the last 3 days, 4 days.
AC.
Yeah. Which kind of sucks because it's like beautiful weather and you're stuck in AC and I got to actually wear a hoodie inside.
Son, it's not beautiful outside. It's fucking hot as fuck. Like last week, Wednesday, I was out working in a, you know, in a open area and it started to rain and it started to thunder and lightning. And I was like, should we be out here? And he was like, they don't give a fuck about us. Let's keep working. And I was like, yeah, but I do kind of care about lightning hitting me.
Right.
That's a concern. But that's pretty much my check-in, ladies and gentlemen.
When I'm not filling up the slurping machines at 7-Eleven, I'm listening to Decoding 40 with my friends. Vashmush and Tashkush. Thank you.
Is it Kamala or Kamala? What, how you pronounce her name? Oh. I'd be butchering. Kamala? Maybe if she was on TV more, I'd know how to pronounce her name, but she'd be hiding in the cut somewhere, counting her dollars. I don't know what, but they had her on. I think it was Rachel Maddox was asking her questions. Yeah, it was Maddow. That's what her name is. Yeah. Right, whatever. Exactly. Maddox, Maddow, whatever.
Somehow you don't get an S in there or S sounding.
Maddox, Maddow, Tadow, nigga, whatever her name is.
Yo, he don't
Rachel. Rachel Maddox.
Rachel's.
Rachel's. Anyway, she was interviewing her and fucking Kamala. She had to look on her face as if I got to answer one more question about how slow this nigga look, I'm going to lose my fucking mind.
Oh, is this post-debate?
Oh, yeah. She must have answered that question about 7,000 times.
Honestly, I've been totally tuned out. What did she say?
That's saying everything but the truth. Just like, oh, well, you know, it's been long. He's tired and blah, blah, blah. It was a long day and the flight and jet lag and he had that's a turkey sandwich. And it's just a whole lot of they're making it look like he was this. And then like to and this is CNN. Like, you know, it's bad when CNN turns on your ass. Compared to, because Fox News, you know, they probably had a fucking ball with it. I didn't even look at Fox News, but CNN, they were all sitting there in silence, like this nigga was already dead. Fox
News was screaming in their pants, I'm sure.
Oh my God!
They were like, oh.
There was ejaculate everywhere.
Mm.
There was ejaculate and squirt water all over the floor at fucking Fox News.
They couldn't wait to open those microphones.
But CNN was acting like the nigga was already dead, like it was a funeral.
I saw a little bit about Van Jones has to be the absolute worst pundit on television.
Yeah, he was out there talking.
I was so hurt to see him and, you know, Joe and because, you know, Joe, like he was talking like he was just having a conversation. He was just eating lunch with Joe 2 days ago. He's full of shit.
Right. At a hospice. That's how he was talking.
But Joe did look like he wanted some applesauce.
I like the Mott's.
Did you guys see that? I want to confirm if this is accurate. I thought I saw a headline from the Washington Post that Biden is supposed to be talking to his family about continuing the race. Did you guys
see that headline?
I didn't see that headline.
It's,
but a lot of people asking for it.
Well, you know what? I think that would be huge news.
Well,
it's probably a fake weekend.
It could be. We're recording on the 30th of June. This is the weekend that he's supposed to be sitting with his family and evaluating.
Yo,
if he can continue to run.
I'm gonna tell you right now, if I see a picture of this nigga on the White House lawn on July 4th in his white drawers with a sparkle in his hand, nigga, it's time for him to quit. Holding a Budweiser. It's time for Grandpa to call it a wrap, son. With some fucking black socks on, some leather slippers, nigga. Get this nigga the fuck out of here, because it's
rockabye, Grandpa.
Grandpa.
Here's the worry: is like, who are you going to substitute?
Gavin Newsom.
I said this last year.
I don't think he is as popular as people want him to be.
So you're talking about California, the largest state in the union. You think he couldn't? He couldn't ramp it up in 4 months.
Just
have him debate Trump.
Right.
I think he can
dismantle a lot of this nonsense.
He doesn't have 1 month.
He's smart. He's effective.
He doesn't have a great reputation in his own state.
Remember, they tried to recall him. No, that was some MAGA shit or Republican shit.
Okay. I think honestly. I'm
just saying that these are weapons. These are things that they weaponize.
But you know what I like about him?
you can weaponize him, but he's not scared. He's not one of those Democrats that are gonna go high while they go low. He's gonna go low with them. Just like when he debated what's the fucking piece of shit from Florida? He made that motherfucker look stupid. Oh, that's what we need. We need someone who's
gonna understand why they were debating. Like, was that
because it was like a back and forth thing because DeSantis was talking about California and a lot of bullshit, and Newsom got on there and destroyed this nigga. And but that's the person
DeSantis was running for president at that point.
Exactly. And but he was going after he kept talking shit about California and Newsom. And Newsom was like, well, why don't we fucking debate? And they debated and he fucking fleeced this nigga. And that's what we need. We need someone who is going to stand up to Trump.
California does not have a great record right now in terms of they have a great record on the environment, but their homeless situation is out of control.
So is New York.
Taxes
so is real estate.
No. It's a whole nother level. You've never been to L.A. You've never seen San Diego. You've never seen the Bay Area. It's a whole nother level. We're talking about encampments as far as you can see. It looks like a refugee camp that you might see on the news in the third world.
If I'm being honest and completely objective, I don't see that as a Newsom or California problem in the sense that California, one, has weather that is conducive to wanting to sleep on the street. So, and it's also a large economy state. So if I'm going to go somewhere, if I feel the need to migrate to another state within the America or within the United States, I'm probably going to lean towards California. I'm not going to go to Oregon. I'm not going to go to Washington. I'm definitely not going to go to Nevada. So it probably is the best option for a lot of people in terms of that side of the country.
I don't think homeless people are relocating. But what does happen
is they absolutely are. What are you talking about?
Not in the numbers that I'm talking about. People are getting priced out of their homes. California is extremely expensive. The cost of living in California is very high. If you're talking about the Bay, if you're talking about Los Angeles, it's really high and people are getting priced out and they no longer can afford to be housed.
New York is still
high. They run out of resources.
Whose fault is that though?
I don't know whose fault it is. I'm just saying this is the situation. This is what's currently happening in California. I didn't say Gavin Newsom is the cause of it. I'm saying because that's where it's going to end up. He's at the helm of a ship that is not doing very well.
All right, but I mean that's playing to the stupid people. Like that's like saying that Joe Biden
is. But how do you think politics plays out?
Yeah, okay. But Trump.
Are they not going to use his record against him?
Yeah, but they want to say Biden.
I'm saying he's not.
You got to have someone who's going to. But my point is, Rick, is right. That you need someone that's going to be able to stand up against Trump. Biden can't even fucking complete a sentence right now. Who else do we have that's going to go against Trump?
I am not advocating for Biden. I'm saying who else? Because Gavin Newsom doesn't have the record for it. He doesn't have the record for it. He's standing in front of he's standing in a state that is not doing well.
Last time I heard, they're not in the black. They're in the red because of all the marijuana money that they have.
They're in the black.
They're in the black. Excuse me. They're not in the red. They went from being in the red, legalized marijuana, to having a surplus of money. Now, how that money gets allocated and all that other shit.
What you're saying is we could say the same thing about New York. New York is making tons of money in tax revenue. That doesn't mean that it trickles down to services to people like us.
I just said that. I don't know how it's being allocated.
What I'm talking about are the people in need in his state are not doing well. And he's not standing on a record of I've helped the people.
So who would you vote for?
I just said I don't know who they would replace him with. I don't know who they would replace him with.
If it was
Newsom. They set no one up. They set no one up to do it. They didn't set anyone up to do it. Not even Kamala. They did not set her up properly.
You know what the problem is?
She can't do it.
You know what the problem is? The problem is that when he was running, first of all, he ran in 2020 at the end of the campaign on some old. Let me throw my hat in, and everybody in the Democratic machine all backed him. He should have did, Joe Biden. What he should have did at that point, he should have said, you know what, I'm going to run for one term, and this is what I'm going to do. Or at least 2 years ago, he should have said, you know what? I'm thinking about this is going to be my last term. And then they would have had the time to build somebody up, whether it was Kamala, whoever it would have been. They would have had the time to find the darling, because just like Obama kind of came out of nowhere, there's people in the Democratic Party's governors or anything else that could have ran a better campaign against Trump.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
So millions of people. I believe because I think the Democrats and Republicans are the same fucking bird on different wings. I think they're the same fucking thing. I think they're beholden to the same AIPAC and everything else and all these other lobbyists. They are the fucking, this is like the fucking good guy in the movie that loses, but you feel sorry that he lost. And they play this puñeta role all the fucking time. And like, if they go high, we're going to go low. If they go low, we're going to go high. And all this fucking moral bullshit, when we all know it's bullshit, instead of being like, fuck you, Trump, and fuck the rest of Republicans, because that is the real world. This fucking Mr. Nice Guy shit, while this guy literally lies after fucking lie, and they sit there and they put their hands under their fucking legs and act like it's not happening. Give me a fucking break already with that bullshit. Grow some balls and fight this nigga like he fights you. Stop playing this, oh, we're going to be nice and this, that. That's bullshit. That's not the world we live in anymore. It doesn't exist. And to think that we're going to be able to fight this nigga,
we don't,
Mr. Nice Guy style, is bullshit to me.
That's the thing.
I don't think they want to win. I think
that's what I'm saying. That's my point. They don't want to win.
That's their character. That's the part.
That's the role of the puñeta
being played by the Democrats.
Yes. And that is by design. That's by design. They don't want to win. They want Project 2025 just as bad as the Republicans, because they've already been bought and sold by the lobbyists who really want this shit to go down. But they're playing the role like, I don't know. I mean, all we have is Joe. And Joe's in the applesauce. Give me a fucking break, yo.
We did it, Joe.
We did it, Joe.
Anyway. I don't think we're disagreeing on this, because at this stage of the campaign, anyone that you sub in is at a severe disadvantage unless they're squeaky clean and have done everything correctly.
I don't think we have to worry about squeaky clean.
Democrats don't get the same that Republicans
this
get.
Come on.
Name one thing Trump did that would not have immediately eliminated.
I'm not saying you're not right. What I am saying is, if we use that framework, then it's us watching the movie pretending we don't know what's going to happen at the end, and a movie we've seen 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. So my point is, if they want to break the mold and if they want to prove to us that this is not some simulcast that we've already seen, they won't care about that, because you're running against someone who's already been a convicted felon, mm-hmm. someone who has already been found liable for sexual assault and rape. And right. you're telling me that in 4 months you can't find someone who is credible enough, who already has a record, that can't run against him?
At least debate him one time and destroy him in a debate.
Okay, let's just imagine that you bring somebody out of obscurity. You've never heard of this guy's name before. His name is Ted Johnson, and he's running against Donald Trump. The name recognition already. In 4 months, he's not going to catch up. It's got to be somebody who people are already sort of familiar with. They kind of know the name, but now they need to know what this person does.
Gavin Newsom. That would be Gavin Newsom.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
it would be him.
I get you. I think that what's happening in California is enough of
people don't even know what's happening in their own town.
Yes, like, exactly.
That's true. But they can tell you what's happening in your town.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
They can tell you how porous the borders are in your town. They ain't never even been there.
Listen,
they know about Chicago, but they never been to Chicago. You're right. No, I get that.
If Gavin Newsom is willing to play on the same field as Trump and be dirty, he can shut that shit down with, Yeah, that may be so, but I don't got 34 felonies that I'll rape bitches. Next question. I mean, that's how you got to come. You can't come any less than that. Don't come with this, well, you know, yeah, he has a point there. No, fuck that.
Yeah.
Pull your dick out, piss on stage, and be like, whatever, nigga, while drinking a beer. That's how they got to come. This
got
nice guy shit, done.
You're right. He's got to be Cameron on It Is What It Is. Just how those two just smashed the whole sports pundit industry.
Yeah.
That's how you have to come in.
Yeah.
And if you really want to shake up the Democratic Party, that's exactly what Trump did.
Yeah.
He just said, I'm doing whatever I want to do.
Uh-huh.
These people are rolling with me.
Mm-hmm.
Get down or you lay down.
Yeah, yeah.
And
Trump,
really
Trump is Beanie Siegel in state property, nigga. Absolutely. That's who he is.
Absolutely.
I don't see a Democrat.
They got to change the fucking game. Like, just
I don't
like
see
Trump
a Democrat who's
going
to move like that. There's no one in politics who was moving like that. No one.
Nigga,
no
the
one.
Game has changed. It's a different field.
He changed the landscape. And here's the problem, right? Do we now become a country where that is our standard for our representation? It's like now we look for the biggest bully, right? Now we want the lawyer.
We've always been
now
that.
We want the lawyer.
Yes.
Here's why
I love talking to you about stuff like this, Rick, is because you are truly an idealist. And there are times I walk away from the conversation and is like, why can't I be as open to the idea of optimistic, open to the idea of people being their best selves? It's because I always feel like people are going to go to the lowest denomination of humanity, and they will repeatedly do that. And I have to take a pragmatic approach, particularly when it comes to politics, that if you're not going to be able to throw somebody to the mat, then it's not, you're not going to win. Like, they've already stacked up the Supreme Court. They're already stacked up the federal judges. They're already with this new case, not new case, but the Chevron case, have already pulled the executive order a string.
The three cases this week, they fucking changed the game on everything.
So that's not playing fair. That's not trying to be optimistic or play to the highest level of humanity. That is saying that I want to strip this body politic of all the powers and all the hope and all of the rights that it thinks it has.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be able, and I'm saying I, meaning I don't know if it's the Republicans or whoever. I'm just saying whoever we and they are, that's who is doing this. And they are trying to make sure that they control all the strings, not only with respect to the number of corporations that control the media, that control the food, that control every portion of our lives, reducing the actual will of humanity, and they continue to do it.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree with you, 100%. But when you replace your bully, you replace their bully with your bully, it's only a matter of time before your bully starts bullying you. Our mayor and our mayor and our governor, both Democrats, right? Supposed to be representing the people of this state from the lowest to the highest. We're getting ready to punish people with another tax to drive into the city from New Jersey, or if you had coming from the outer boroughs, if you're coming from Queens, without regard, because they're like $15, not even like $3. Let me charge you $3, right? It's not even like, let me charge you a little something for coming downtown. $15 a day?
That's insane.
This is what I'm talking about. In a Democratic controlled state and city, we're still getting pushed around.
Because we have
New York has always been Democratic.
But
New York is, let me just say this real quick. New York has always been Democratic.
It's not about New York. It's not about New York.
I'm just saying because you talked about Adams and Hoke.
I use them as examples for what a bully's presence is going to bring. Because all you're doing is replacing your bully for their bully, and your bully is eventually going to bully you. So my idea is that
that's what's happening.
That's not what we ultimately want. What we ultimately want is someone who's going to represent the people, right? We want our needs and desires to be represented in the government that we elect. And not to say that this is the election where this is going to happen, but we have to have a goal in mind. We can't just say, we are going to combat their bullying with our bullying, because guess what? All we do is escalate, and we create a world that we didn't want to live in. The world that we're trying to get to is represented by people who are trying to take our concerns, our values, and our morals. They're trying to exercise that. They're trying to put that in the legislation. What's happening now is...
Who are those people? You saw what they did to Jamal Bowman.
The bully you speak of, you have Democrat, you said Democrat or Republican bully. I'm going to say that there is no such thing.
There's no such thing as what?
Democrat or Republican bully. You know why? Because the corporations that fund both these niggas, that's the bully. And they play whatever they want to play to keep us divided while the rich people get what the fuck they want. It's pure statistics. In this country, since its inception, has never given the masses what they want. It's by design. The rich people since the 1800s, the Rockefellers, the J.P. Morgans, they have divided this country, and it's been like that since its inception. It's never going to change without a revolution or beheading these people. And even if you do that, then what? It's a fucked up design, and we live with this hope and dream that someone's going to come along and combat that. You know who the last person that was? JFK. You know what happened to him, right? His back of his
head. That's
Well, okay.
What I'm saying is that the solution to these problems is not a bigger, badder Democratic bully.
But I think that's
my point. It's outside of this system because we only get two choices.
What I was going to say is that's beside the point because really, and I'm not sure who said this, and I want to give credit where credit's due. Maybe it was Amanda Seales, that we are at a point where the powers that be are basically saying, who is going to be the most influential person that can sway or make the people go to sleep in order for us to push our agenda forward? But it's really not a matter of what they say on these presidential campaigns. It's about who can sway enough people to let them to provide cover to get their agenda done.
You know, along with that, I think they've reached this apex, the powerfuls that really run this country. They've reached the apex of I don't give a fuck who we put up because we're going to do what the fuck we want to do. And whoever is the better, whoever is the biggest talker. And that's why Trump's so popular, because this nigga has been able to amass an army of people behind him, and he's clearly a rich person who doesn't give a fuck about 99.9% of the people who follow him. But all he keeps saying is jobs are being taken and blah, blah, blah. These jobs that he speak of, they were gone 30 years ago under the Bush and fucking Clinton administration. They sold those jobs a long time ago. They let the corporations leave this country and all that other shit and leave the country and still get tax breaks.
The black jobs, that's the new threat that we're...
What are those black jobs? I want to know.
You don't know what they are?
I don't know.
Hold on. I got a list. Wait, let me find it, please. Pause. Please, let's pause.
Merch drop!
You are now listening to Decoding 40.
What's up, y'all? We need y'all to support this podcast. Pick yourself up a t-shirt, a hoodie. They're soft. They're poly tri-blend, luxurious. They're furry on the inside. They're really plush. You can sleep in them. Your wife can sleep in it. Your daughter can steal it. And she can sleep in it. Go over to decoding40pod.com and get yourself a t-shirt, hoodie, whatever you like.
Decoding40pod.com.
All right, so I've got Spade's project manager.
Spade's project. Did you just renege?
And what's so funny, I just talked to a Puerto Rican dude that only plays Spades. But he's American and a veteran. But t-shirt order director for family reunions.
I need 3 extra large, 2 smalls, and 4 mediums.
Kool-Aid coordinator is now under attack. Mm. And the homecoming shift lead. So all you HBCUs, especially, your jobs are under attack.
Excuse me. I'm here to take the Kool-Aid coordinator, please. I can make a mean glass of Kool-Aid, Holmes.
OC.
I use real sugar from a sugar cane.
What's weird is that even comes up, and this is what I'm saying, like nobody really cares. CNN doesn't care, MSNBC doesn't really care. How is that able to be said And that person is still a viable candidate.
And then Rubio co-signed it and doubled down.
Did he? I'm not surprised by that, but, you know, like I said.
And I think what adds to that is there was not a single Black-owned media group in that auditorium. Yeah.
And CNN was the one who was controlling it, right? It was the CNN or Fox?
It was CNN. CNN. So then the question was put out because CNN responded by saying that none of the Black media outlets had responded in time. So then the question was, well, when were the announcements or notifications sent out?
I got 5 minutes.
Right. Uh-oh, sorry.
Hold up. Did you remember that white supremacist dude I used to do where he always showed up to the problems late? That's who sent out the email.
You know what? They said Tuesday. I sent it out Wednesday because I thought it was a day. I don't know what happened.
And then you have a white man and white woman asking the questions. They're not doing any fact checking. What is, like, this is what I'm saying. Like, this whole situation, they are literally playing in our face. And I was wondering, at what is it because we are more in tune and attuned to what's going on that this nonsense is amplified and we're like, okay, this is ridiculous? Or have we always been disillusioned to this point, but we are just more vocal about it?
I think it's a combination of both. And I think that what's happened in is that we've always had the sight, right? Since we were young. I think all of us, especially us three, grew up during a time when our eyes were opened by not only our music, but just in general. But they always did a real good job of like hiding it in plain sight. It wasn't that open. It was like, now you walk into the room, it's like, why is everybody's dick out? Like, what's going on here? Like before, we knew they were there. We knew the perverts were there. But now the perverts are like, yeah, whatever. Here's my dick. Like, it's just so in your face now that you go, and you have to even second guess that. You go, are these motherfuckers really serious? Like, I'm watching this shit. I'm like, is this? Hold the fuck up. When is someone going to pull my leg and say, we fucking with you? That's how it feels now. Yeah. That's how it feels.
Yeah, man. I'm really like, I mean, and it's funny because I've really been into politics. And I remember a friend of mine who was a little bit older than me was telling me that he just was not into politics anymore. This is probably 10, 12 years ago. And I was like, man, why? I mean, this is like the lifeblood of, he's like, it just does not feel like it has anything to do with me. Mm. And I feel like that now. Like these are conversations that are being had that don't really involve me and intentionally, right? Like the idea that someone like Jamal Bowman can be replaced because he was advocating for a ceasefire and AIPAC didn't like that. So now they got this guy who has horrible politics, probably has nothing planned for that district. Mm-hmm. And
I think he has a slow eye.
Oh, he has a very slow eye. He and I will never see eye to eye on anything.
But you know what it is too, is that I think that for us, and I'm talking about us three, we have so many more bigger fish to fry when it comes to just survival. That like it's like I don't even have the spare time to really give a fuck or give that much attention to it just because, nigga, I'm trying to pay my bills. And they've created an environment nationwide where people are just trying to survive.
Right.
I mean, you can't even go to the supermarket no more with less than $300 in your pocket and not feed your family. Like gas is high, food is high. And while we're like, we try to give a little effort to what's going on, you know, the food prices, like the greed economics is out of control right now.
Right. And then we find out these are artificially inflated prices.
Yes. Yes.
And then we're like, okay, so you're stressing me out so I can't focus on the things that need to be focused on because you feel like, one, this is the money play.
Mm-hmm.
And two, this keeps you distracted.
And then you look at the debate and fucking they're talking about that golf game.
I don't know if you all remember.
Which is crazy.
Back when this inflation began, I was talking before, as I was talking about how these corporations are coordinating to make this uncomfortable for people and make it a better environment for business for the next administration. They wanted to squeeze people. They wanted to make it uncomfortable for people. I think I might have said it before this last election, before Biden was elected, that they wanted to make this as uncomfortable for people as possible so that they could say that this is because of Biden's presidency. But meanwhile, they're making so much money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all coming out. And there will be no retribution for this. There will be no repercussions for this.
They're hence the 2025 plan.
Business as usual.
Yeah.
And the only people that get hurt is us. We have to overturn this. We have to turn this shit upside down. There's no other alternative.
Falls in line with, I think they said no Fortune 500 CEO is willing to back Trump. Why? Because all of these companies have made so much money over the last couple of years. It's like, I don't care who's in the office.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
And I don't want him because, one, he's incredibly buyable at this point because there's no telling what he wants to keep from coming out. This dude is a felon, and we're talking about him potentially being the head of the country. Like, come on.
Again. Yo, hold up. Did you guys ever see the Ballad of Ricky Bobby, whatever? And it's with I forgot what the guy's name, but he's the racer, and it's a fucking comedy. But the point is at one part, he loses the race, he loses popularity, so now he's trying to make a comeback. And by doing so, he's wearing this uniform, and he's got so many sponsors on. His car is covered. That's going to be Trump. This nigga will be endorsing Frosted Flakes while drinking a glass of Kool-Aid with his feet up with some Crocs on. Like, he doesn't give a fuck. He just wants money.
He needs it. It's not just wants it. He needs it. He has legal issues that he needs. And these millionaires are putting up millions of dollars to put him in their pocket.
Yes.
And this is the part that we don't want to talk about, but corporate media does not want to talk about, but they'd rather create this, what do you call it? The novella between the old man and the old man convict that we need to sort of buy into. It's nonsense. That's what I was asking. Like, has our situation or has technology helped us amplify this so we can see it more clearly? No. Or have we always been this disillusioned? And it's just like we're getting older and it's just giving less fucks.
We're even easier to manipulate now. Even when we only had three news stations, right? And the government told the news what they wanted them to know, right? They gave them a press release. We're even easier to manipulate now because we carry the shit around in our phone, and we will get into an algorithm that will serve us exactly what we want to see, right? There are disinformation farms,
mm-hmm.
and all they do is make memes. And even if you, and here's, there was a study that said that even if you find out later on that the meme that you saw was disinformation, the emotion that you felt when you read it sticks with you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still influencing you even after you find out that it was false.
Oh, wait.
To manipulate.
Fun fact. Do you know who sends more disinformation from Democrats or Republicans?
Democrats.
Who shares it more? Democrats share more disinformation than Republicans, actually. Like, Republicans just share stupid shit. But Democrats will share information not knowing if it's actual factual official tissue, they would just share it.
I would question those statistics. I think a Republican wrote that meme. Black job.
You found it?
You found it.
Person who starts the electric slab to keep everybody on beat. Black job.
Black job.
Church usher. That's the Black National Guard.
Sir, we got room for two people here. You got a family of three. You got to go down there.
Move down the aisle. Move down the aisle, please.
Sir, we got enough room to pick Miss Mary.
I need you to wait till the pastor finish the prayer. Thank you very much.
Black job. Plastic bag archivist.
Won't you throw that plastic bag away? Yo, on the real, I think that's a black and brown job because I know right now if I go outside into my cabinet in the basement, I have a bag full of plastic bags. I got at least 100 plastic bags, and it's illegal in Jersey right now.
Yo, plastic bag archivist is hell of funny. Wow.
True, too. How many Chinese food plastic bags we got?
A potato salad, Judge. That's a black guy.
Who the fuck put the raisins in here? Get this shit out of here. Somebody. All potato salads with raisins are immediately disqualified.
This is the ultimate black job. Person who does a good job but gets overlooked for career advancement. That's a black job.
Mm. Can you go ahead and train your manager, please?
Wait, they just started yesterday.
We're going to need you. We're going to need you. We already know you do the job. We're going to need you to train your boss.
What?
We're going to need you to train your boss. Mm. And we're not going to pay you extra for it either.
Matter of fact, we want you to do this on your personal time.
Mm-hmm. And after he becomes your boss, he will then subsequently fire you. Thanks for teaching me how to do my job, Leon.
Thanks for playing.
Black job. Person who makes the to-go plates at the cookout. That's a black job.
You already got one fucking plate. Now get out of here.
That's a very trusted position. That is. You got to pass a background check, get fingerprinted, bonded.
But you better hope you are a favorite relative. Get some extra.
Or the girl that your cousin bought. She kind of cute. She can get an extra plate.
This Week in Hip Hop.
This Week in Hip Hop, on June 28th, 1989, two iconic albums were dropped. First being Big Daddy Kane's Long Live the Kane and Public Enemy's Nation, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. I remember getting the Kane tape. See, y'all motherfuckers out there don't know about tapes. See, we had Walkmans with tapes. There was no CDs. There was no downloading the music. You had to get a tape and you had to play the tape. And if you wanted to get to your favorite song, you had to rewind or fast forward to that song.
Yep.
I remember that Big Daddy Kane tape. At the time, I was working at Shoppers Village and Sneakers Village, and they used to have a record shop down the hall from where I worked. And I remember popping that tape in. And again, this was before bootlegging. So when you got the tape, there was the first time you heard it. You know what I mean? I mean, unless it came on, what was it, 98.7 at the time, or the radio station, and that was only 2 hours on Fridays and Saturdays, so you'd have to wait to hear a song. But I remember putting that tape in and being like, holy shit. Like, at the time, it was Kane. He was one of the premier MCs out of Brooklyn, and there was always this, I don't know if it was a real battle or it was a rumor of, like, this kind of battle between him and Rakim. Who was the better MC? And I just realized, I'm re-listening it to today, and I realized that he uses Rakim on Smooth Operator, because I'm so smooth. That's Rakim's voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I never realized that until then. I was like, that's Rakim's voice. But
is that
obviously
he sampled his voice?
Yes, he goes, because I'm so smooth. That's Rakim.
So smooth, yeah.
Wow. Didn't know that.
And I realized that today. So shout out to that album. I mean, what more can you say about P.E.'s? This was their second album, It Takes a Nation. And that album, it was like, parts of it is like a concert. And I think they were in England. And I want to say it was Russell Brand who introduces the album, because it sounds just like him. That album is iconic. And I just think back to a time when any given week, you'd have like three or four dope albums coming out, and you had to make a choice which $8.98 you was going to spend it on, because, you know, we wasn't rich back then. The album was $9, right? So, I mean, where were you guys at the time, and what did you think about both those albums?
1988. My sister has graduated from high school, and she is going to Howard University, and my mother has packed up my uncle's station wagon with all her stuff to drive her down. And all I have is my Walkman with my Public Enemy tape. And I don't even know if I'm pretty sure it was probably a bootleg. I'm pretty sure I taped the tape from somebody else, but I could have very possibly had an original, because I did have a job at that time. That P.E. album was on repeat for that entire trip, because I didn't care to engage in anything that she was doing, because my sister's 4 years older than me. So she's going to school. She's 18. I'm 14.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give a shit about anything you're doing. I don't even really want to be driving in this station wagon to this whack-ass school. I'm just here to protest. that was the attitude, but I really did care about my sister and where she was going to school. But you had to have an attitude. Hmm.
Yeah.
And but I played that PE album over and over again. But it was specifically Bring the Noise. Because I played the album, because you want to hear the rest of the album. But when I got to Bring the Noise, that was what I was, that was like everything.
Yeah.
That was like the best song. Like even today, like I still play that song. It's in a playlist. It's going to come around on my playlist.
You know what song I loved, Rick, on that album? Night of the Living Bassheads.
Also.
The band. That shit right there. Oh, my God. We be illin'.
Also, amazing.
Yes, yes.
Shout out to Hank Shockley and what's the name of the production crew?
The Bomb Squad.
Shout out to the Bomb Squad. Because their sound was completely different than anything else anybody else was doing. And like they were using the horn.
Yeah.
That shriek of the horn. And like that became like the centerpiece of that song.
Yeah. And sonically, it's still dope. It gets you hype as fuck. They were one of the first groups that use sound to kind of get you hype more than anybody else. It was a package with Chuck's Rhymes and the sounds that kind of made you like, yeah, I'm going to war.
Chuck's Rhymes were way over my head. I had no idea what Chuck was talking about. I had no idea who most of the people he was talking about.
Yeah.
I have no idea, but it made me research. It made me think about it. It made me find out who these people were.
Definitely.
And why he was talking about them.
Mm-hmm. Right, for sure.
Definitely.
Yo, for me, first I got to say, Kane is one of my favorite MCs. And I actually saw him at Showtime at the Apollo for one of the shows. And Rob Bass also performed that night. Rob Bass was booed off of the stage.
What?
Yeah.
What did he played It Takes Two and he got booed?
Yes. This is before it got major radio play. Kane gets up there and does Raw.
Here I am, R-A-W.
When I tell you the Apollo felt like it was going to fall to pieces, we all...
Reading...
Right.
And just getting Rock involved. Like,
X-Plan, yes. All of them.
Being revolutionary was fun.
Right.
Let's fucking destroy the system while listening to the music.
Right. And it felt like a responsibility. Like, this is something I have to do.
Yes. Yes.
And this is funny. I was just talking to my youngest son about this. I said, listen, I know that you like to have fun. And I know that I'm not trying to put a lot of on you, but I want you to recognize that this culture right now, the way that it's situated, is designed to convince you, one, that you are not as great as you can be and are, and two, it wants to distract you from all of the gifts that you actually have to make this world better. And it's even more so now because you have an algorithm that is feeding you the same thing over and over again in order to placate you, to just move you away from what your purpose in life is.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were lucky. We grew up when we grew up.
But at the same time, though, we were still being fed nonsense. Because I'm telling you, when I think about how much we still have to unlearn from the 80s and the 90s, it's insane.
Yeah,
because
in our formative years, we watched cartoons that gave us lessons on life that were absolutely wrong for us. That told us
racist as shit.
Racist as shit.
Racist, sexist. I mean, Dave Chappelle had a joke. He was like, Pepe Le Pew was raping motherfuckers. Like,
right.
He was taking the pussy. You know what I'm saying? So,
at the time, but I'm like, it's on TV. It can't be bad, right?
Right. Yeah. Yo, shout out to those two amazing albums. Shout out to Kane and P.E. And also in 96.
All of the artists and innovators that worked on those albums.
Yes.
Also in 96, Reasonable Doubt dropped, I think, on the 28th of June or the 20th, I believe. Oh, no, 96. It dropped in the same week. 96, this is years later. So that was Jay-Z's first album, which, again, wasn't received with much fanfare, but is a dope album in its right.
I know this is sort of a side jaunt, but given that we were discussing that period of hip hop and what it meant to the fans of hip hop at that point, and we had Biz Markie, we had Just Ice, we had a variety of different artists at the time, from Kane to Public Enemy. When do you think that it switched? Where do you think that the switch came where they said, okay, these kids are getting too out of hand, we got to shut this down?
I'd say about 92 to 93 is when it started. I remember being in college at an HBCU at North Carolina Central. I remember because I was from New York, when you go from New York, which is the mecca of hip hop at the time, and you go down south, you start to hear other parts of the country because they're reflected in the population of the school. So you have people from Florida, you have people coming from the West and the Midwest and Atlanta. And all that. So those sounds came into play. And that's when I realized like there was something different out there, you know, outside of Luke and everything else. A lot of that California music was, you know, to me, joke we thought was funny because they were serious. They were really talking some violent shit, like gangbanging and all that shit that we weren't hearing in New York like that.
Was that part, I don't think, was the shift, only because there was a variety of different artists, right? So Luke was still popular, you know? We liked
the
booty shake Luke was bringing to the table.
But I think Ice-T
was bringing a different, we weren't really rocking with it like that, but you know what I mean? But there was a point when corporate took over and said, this is the thing that we're rocking, and we're going to shut down all of this revolutionary.
I want to say around 90, 92 is when it kind of started to go the other way. It didn't happen overnight, of course.
Right.
By 95, 96, nobody cared about KRS. Nobody cared about rock. Nobody cared about Kane. Nobody cared about these people because hip hop is one of the only music that here today, gone today. Right. So if you know, we don't honor, at least the newer generation doesn't honor the forefathers. Right. Like we do, because we grew up during that era. But it's like, oh, them niggas is old. And like I even saw a post today. I think it was on Threads where the person said, if you 40 years old and still listening to hip hop, then you old or some stupid shit like that. Like you need to grow up or something like that.
That's one dumb.
Written by some young motherfucker, right? So it's like that, but that's an ideal that a lot of people carry in hip hop. Like, if you over 40, you shouldn't even be listening to this. I still listen to hip hop. I might not listen to the newest stuff because it's just not for me. And I've taken, I'm fine with that. That's just not for me. You guys listen to what you listen to. I don't listen to that.
A lot of it's not good. I'm not even on front. That's not even hating. But to answer the question, I think, what comes to mind to me is the Bad Boy, the Uptown era. It was sort of driving that shift. The song that really pops in my mind for some reason is Past the Cavassier, because I think that was sort of the time where it was like
the Jiggy era.
Yeah. Like we were moving away from the consciousness. We were moving away from things that edified us to these external and superficial things. And I would even, maybe even, they might not like to hear it, but even that Virginia sound contributed to that, because that New Jack City swing, now we're talking about girls' butts in a more commercial sense. Like it's not about the movement. It's not about fighting the system or raging against the machine. It's about having a party. It's about having a good time. So,
and zooming in that poom poom.
Zooming in the poom poom. So, like, I think we were gullible contributors to this, right? So it was like,
yeah,
it caught us at the right time.
That the Rex and Effect felt more like a slightly more northern version of what Luke was doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I personally think that shift happened when you had a group like NWA who had no radio airplay. But all of a sudden, they became the guide for an entire coast, which took over. Because now gangster rap became a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And East Coast started replicating what was going on in the West Coast, because that was the thing that was selling, right? So now it's about sales.
But you know what's funny about that, Rick? And everything you said is correct, but I remember Kool G Rap, and Kool G Rap wasn't, he wasn't, but he's totally, I remember him. Yeah, he was NWA, but they never give him that.
I'm just saying that we had a variety.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, Slick Rick, Kool G Rap, PSK. PSK was the first gangster rap ever. King T, King Son.
There was a variety. You say variety because everybody's album had a club song, a love song, a gangster song, a song, a conscious song. Like there was a time when there was like five or six different type of.
Right. You got to have.
Tracks. Yes. Right. Yes. Yes. But you know what? If you want to, before we get out of here real quick, if you want to listen to an album that kind of breaks all that down, is De La Soul Stakes is High, which came out in like 96. Stakes is High kind of goes at that Jiggy shit. At the time, right? It goes out because the Dove has a line, if you're so ready to die, you need to question your life. And he was talking about Big. And that shit, right? If you're so ready to die, you need to question your life. And that shit right there, because at the time, I've always been, what do you call it, backpack aficionado when it comes to hip hop. Yeah, before he was most, if I remember when he was on De La's album when he first came out. So it's like, and then on that track of, it wasn't baseball. It was another track they did. It was Drez was on it and everything else. But they had their sound. To me, I had an affinity to that sound more than I did P. Diddy and them at the time. Because I there was a time I was like, fuck that Bad Boy shit. I was rocking with Black Moon and the rest of the crew from Brooklyn. Like that that whole shit to me was better than that Jiggy shit. Like I was anti Jiggy. Like I remember going to Nassau Community and seeing these niggas walking around with Versace shirts and shit. I'm like, what the fuck are these niggas doing? What are you talking about? But that's just me. But I think definitely NWA changed the whole scope. But yeah, go back and listen to Stakes is High. And there's a lot of tracks on there talking about that whole transition and how it just kind of changed things. But anyway, it's getting late. Sweating like a pig down in this basement.
Yeah, gotta be up at 5:30.
Yeah, no doubt. I gotta be up early. All right, so as Brother Leon sings a hymn, Brother Leon, can you please take us out with "Jesus Wept"?
It's time to go.
Recording 40. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of Decoding 40. I hope you had a good time and you listened to what we had to say. Again, if you like what you hear, please reach out to 619-940-4040. Please leave a message, holler at us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, and was it Twitter or is it X? Twitter X.
I don't know.
Fuck them both. But you can reach out at Decoding 40 if you want to. If you want to send us an email, reach out at Decoding 40 on our Gmail. If you're looking to buy some merch, go to decoding40pod.com and buy a t-shirt and help support a hungry podcast. And before we go out, what have you learned? What have you decoded this week?
I decoded this week that this world is in some serious trouble. Doesn't matter who wins this election. The world is in trouble. The world is in serious trouble because we don't just vote for the president. We're voting for an administration. There's an administration that left previously that was full of felons, criminals, indicted people, people who actually went to prison. And then there are the administration of this current president who we have no idea what they're up to. But the landscape of this government and how it's working is changing, regardless of what they're doing. We're fucked.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the double truth. Sure. What about you, Al?
The day of the Geechee is gone.
You know, that's extra funny because seeing you in the wife beater, it seemed like a personal attack. I know it's probably not.
Oh, no, it's not.
Oh, shit. Soldier story, no doubt.
Day of the Geechee is gone.
Day of the Geechee is gone. I was going to reference Malcolm X. One hand washes the other, but Brother Baines is not a two-bit hustler. Oh, man. What have I decoded? I've decoded, yeah, we're definitely in trouble, but what I really decoded was the older we get, the older our parents get. And these people that we've seen all our life start to lose certain things, whether it's, you know, they get become forgetful, they start to lose weight, they become smaller, they become, like I said, for the first time the other day, I felt like I was taking my father out, not us going out together. And even though he drives and he's still sharp, like he's not at all, you know, feeble, but I can see it on the horizon because he's going to be 80 next year. He's not getting any younger and he's fighting it hard. Like he's very, very independent. But I know there's going to be a time. There's going to be a time where I'm going to have to take care of my uncle and my pops. And it scares me because I love those men so much and they've mean so much to me. And I don't ever want to lose them. But the inevitability is that one day they will leave. I say this to anybody who's listening. If you have parents that are still here with you, take the time and love them. If you're lucky to have grandparents that are still with you, take the time and love them and listen to them because one day they're not going to be here. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the real truth. And the day the Geechee's gone and all of that shit.
Roof. Yeah. Oh, by the way, if you have not watched Do the Right Thing in a while, this is a great time to celebrate that movie, being that it's the 35th anniversary.
And not much has changed since that movie.
How about that?
Peace.
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 Thank you for listening to Decoding 40.